Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. It's Saturday, April the 4th, 2015, and this is The Last Word with Michael Lawson. We have a special presentation today, an Easter presentation. And for all those that didn't hear the show yesterday, you're going to be in for a treat because we've added a couple of things for it. This is one part of the show. This isn't the whole show. This is the interview with Father Carl, my pastor at my church, Our Lady of Consolation. And I think everybody will enjoy it. It's an Easter presentation. So sit back for the next hour and a half or so, and you will enjoy. Thank you.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. I am He. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him was made nothing that has been made. Him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shines on in the darkness, and the darkness grasped it not.
Been asking questions about a child.
We have, Your Majesty. We've come a great distance in search of him.
And who told you about such a child who was to be born a king in my kingdom?
We saw the rising of his star, and his star has been our guide.
You have followed a star from Asia to the center of the world? Haven, you know of this child king they look for?
In prophecy, there is mention made of a Messiah.
And where is this Messiah to be born?
The prophet Hosea named Egypt as the place of birth. The great Isaiah spoke of Nazareth.
And was 700 years ago.
Your Majesty, if I may be so bold, the prophet Micaiah named Bethlehem.
I remember. From you, Bethlehem, shall he come forth who is to be ruler in all Israel? I am an Idumean, not a Judean. The priests here in Judea mock me in their temple. The temple which I built, they accuse me of impiety. Tell them, Antipas.
The priests are envious of my father. He knows the prophets better than they and has more faith in them.
Everyone knows that I am a pious man. Magi, when you find this child, how can you be certain that he is the one?
By the accuracy of the stars.
Yeah. Then it is only by the star that you can know.
What greater spokesman can a child have than a star?
The air is cold. Your Majesty should rest.
If great Herod will give us leave, we should be on our way.
Go then. If you find this child, bring me word that I too might worship him.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
This is the last word of Michael Lawson. It is April the 1st, April Fool's Day. And I am here with my pastor, Father Carl Del Judas. How do you pronounce that right?
Del Judas.
Del Judas.
Del
okay.
Judas, yeah.
Okay.
And you're, from, and you're from Brooklyn, too.
I'm
come
from
on
Brooklyn.
Now.
That's true. Well, this is, we're recording this because it's the week before the, I guess, the biggest holiday week in Catholicism.
Yes, Michael, I'd say Catholicism and Christianity.
Christianity.
Yes, fall.
Although, the way we are, who's Christian seems to be in question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a lot of people who say, well, you are a Christian. No, you're not a Christian. We're talking about the Christianity, and we're going to be talking about specifically the Passion of Christ.
All right.
Now, what is the meaning of the Passion of Christ? What do you think that means?
My experience, mm-hmm. my understanding of Passion is a period of time that Jesus experienced just before his crucifixion and death. So I probably say Passion Tide would begin liturgically on Palm Sunday. This is called Passion Week. We celebrate the gospel we heard on Sunday was from St. Mark. It talked about Jesus' entry to Jerusalem with the palms, his Last Supper with his disciples, and his crucifixion and entombment. This whole week reflects that. But, of course, the highlight would be reached beginning tomorrow evening, Good Friday, and through Saturday evening. We celebrate the Lord's Day Supper, the celebration of the Lord's Day Supper on Holy Thursday, the Passion of the Lord on Good Friday, and the great Vigil of Easter on Holy Saturday night.
Now, when Jesus entered, I guess, Jerusalem,
yeah.
during the Passion, this was a like a major celebration, was it? It seemed they were, everybody was out trying to shake his hand, trying to meet him. I mean, this was a major, it was almost like a festival, I guess. How did the people know that he was coming? Does it say that anywhere?
No, it doesn't.
I mean, they didn't have telephones, and, you know, they didn't have bongos or beating drums that he was coming. How did they know that this man was going to come to Jerusalem?
Yeah. Well, one opinion I have on that is that news travels.
Bad news travels faster.
Bad news travels faster. You're on the road, you're at your inn, your hometown, you're saying, gee, next week I'm going to Jerusalem, somebody goes around business, you talk to some friends, guess who's coming to town? That Jesus guy from Nazareth. That could have been how the word got out. Or what I like to think, too, is that Jesus would send a few of his disciples ahead of time to prepare things. And
because it wasn't a Holiday Inn, he couldn't phone up for a reservation.
No, you just found him and locate a place to stay.
Right, right.
And I'm wondering, when I look at this, that sometimes with today's people, when they travel today, some of them, if they're a famous
the
advanced team. Thank you. That's the technical term we use today.
Right.
They would send the advanced team to make sure things are arranged, and maybe they pull a few strings. Says, "Come on, come and meet me at the gate."
Right.
And other people see it happening. Now, that doesn't say that happened in the gospel, but we send an advanced team in to make sure you have a place to stay and all the fine things you need to do. Who's to say words weren't exchanged with others? Gee, he's coming to town. Let's greet him at the gate. And in that particular Mediterranean culture, when people met you at the gate, I mean,
you
met at the gate big time. I mean, that was it. Oh, yeah.
Guess who's coming to dinner, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No pun intended, yes.
That's right.
Yes, yeah.
So now, there were hundreds or maybe thousands of people that was greeting Jesus. But were there elements that we were talking about this before about that were jealous. That this man coming to town, who supposedly had done miracles and whatnot, would have been the high priest that would have been jealous.
Yeah, he really, people in positions of power who felt jealous or threatened by his teaching or his words, for whatever reasons, they felt like he was attacking them. In many ways, he was pointing fingers at them. I'll stand corrected on this. Very little that I have yet to see where Jesus criticizes his Jewishness. He never criticized, as far as I know, being Jewish and living according to the Torah. His criticism was the authorities, the leaders of the spiritual religious leaders of the community, at them saying that they were the ones who were, let's say, not faithful to the Torah, to the teachings of the Lord God, that they were setting bad examples for everybody else to follow. So he attacked them, not the teachings as much as the teachers. And anybody who's been challenged, I don't care who we are, someone challenges us, we feel, I know it's just been out of shape, so to speak. Right? And no doubt some of the leadership in the community, their noses got bent out of shape. So that's where the anger may have been directed at him because of that.
Did some of the people feel that his coming was like, he's going to change everything. This is going to be it. He's going to kick the king at the time was King Herod, right? Right. So King Herod, he's going to kick Herod out. He's going to send all his soldiers. They're going to be gone. And because he's going to be, just like when President Obama came into office, he said, oh, we have a black president. Everything's going to change. There's going to be a chicken in every pot. It don't work that way.
No, it didn't work for the people either. Their mindset, many of the people had their mind on political freedom.
Right.
An independent nation, free of the Roman yoke.
Right.
And many of them thought that Jesus was going to be that particular civic leader, political, military leader, and some hearts and minds. That's what they were looking for. So they greeted him as being that great liberator.
Right. And he wasn't political, but they perceived him to be political.
He always walked the line about being, I use the word apolitical. Something jumped out, he was addressing, he addressed it.
Right.
And if it happened to be political, that wasn't the intention.
Right.
It was strictly to address a situation. I think a textbook example we've talked about in the past was the coin with Jesus.
Right.
You take the coin, at Caesar's head and give the gold to Caesar.
Right, give it to Caesar.
Right. And, but then when you go to temple, you be sure you get a temple coin and give that to God.
Right, that's right.
Give each what each one is due.
Is due.
Is, do what you have to do as good citizens, mm-hmm. what each one must do.
Right, right. So you have these elements in the crowd that's waiting for him to come to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And everybody, well, not everybody, but I peep there were different factions that were expecting different things from this man, or will, and some were just looking, not even knowing what to expect.
I would say so, yes.
So it's just like, it wasn't, see, it's not like today where you could set up meetings and conferences with people and gather people together, and before you left there, it was on the internet, mm-hmm. and everybody in the world knew what happened. I mean, you had to be there mm-hmm. or take word of mouth. And we know how word of mouth is sometimes. It's not exactly what was actually said. It's your own perception of what was said.
Oh, yes.
So some people say, well, look, I got to really hear from the horse's mouth what this man is saying. And now, Herod wasn't worried about this. He didn't think twice about it. That's another Jew coming in town, right? That's it. You know, oh, so what? You know, as long as he got his cut, his Caesar's gold coin in his coffee, and as long as the people remained satisfied and quiet,
welcome to Block Talk Radio. Now,
what was the seemed to be the, I understand through the readings that one of the things that changed it was when, and I don't remember who it was watching
the show. It appears that the host has already gathered to the show. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio.
Some Mark's gospel from this past weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
And some of the people. Now, according to some of the stories I read, it was that Judas is the one that got upset about it. And then, according to the gospel this past weekend, it said that some of the people there got upset about it. It, like it was the woman used, it was her job. Anyway, right. I mean, so how can people tell somebody how much to use? I mean, it's their own. You know, it wasn't that she was giving it away to other people. You said, why use it on this one man, all this? Well, and the explanation was, I don't remember what was the explanation she used that they gave in the reading. Why she? Oh, well. Christ said to them, "I don't remember what it was. What was the quote?" He said to them, "Well, he actually told them to, if this woman wants to use that, that's her business.
She's free to do it. Yeah,
she's free to do it." But people were taken aback by that. They said, "Well, why should she?" Now, this is a problem that I have. So we have the same problem today. I mean, people can't use what they want to use for their own self without somebody criticizing it.
Well, it's like somebody, perhaps a couple, they want to take a nice vacation somewhere and want to travel as like, close to first class as possible, and they're criticized. Why don't you give that to charity?
Yeah.
Well, you know, perhaps a couple does give to charity already, and they're entitled to take a little break and rest.
Right.
If they want to spend it on their money on themselves, that's fine. Their business, and it's not anyone else's business how they do it.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a, Jesus wasn't actually saying, well, I deserve this. He was saying, these people or this woman that's doing this, this is what she wants to do.
Right. That's right.
And you can't criticize her, you know, for saying that she needs to give it to charity or give it to someone else.
Yeah.
Hey, as you said, she could be giving to charity all along. We don't know. Maybe she gave it the day before a whole other jar to charity. You know, so we don't know. But anyway, so is this considered one of the turning points where things started going south in a lot of people's minds? Or was there something else we can point to?
I think earlier on in his ministry, probably, I'll say it was his first or second year of his ministry, when he began to speak out his evangelistic message, that he began stepping on toes.
Mm.
And preaching his message of good news. He stepped on toes. And then that's probably when some of the problems began to be started. Because he was, like I said, criticizing the local establishment and stepping on their toes. So it happened, no doubt, a few years earlier. But that was everything was building on his
building
on his previous actions. So by the time it got to this point of his life, the last few days, there was a case against him, so to speak.
And now he's speaking in front of Bojangles Arena with tenfold more people.
Yeah,
so,
right. Yeah.
You know, in Jerusalem. So now,
Everybody's hearing this now. It's not like, 10 or 20 or 40 or 50 people.
You know, I mean, you have thousands, maybe throngs.
If you can speak to people, sure, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, it's the big city.
It's the big city. So what day would we say that in the Bible it said that he entered Jerusalem? Would this be like a Wednesday, a Tuesday, beginning of the week? Or?
He would have entered the first day of the week, which would be Sunday.
Sunday, okay.
So it would be, for us, it's a Sunday.
Sunday, right.
So he would have entered the city on Sunday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
We call Sunday today,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And during the days up until Holy Thursday, what was he doing? Just having counsel with people, talking to people? What was he doing to build up to this Holy Thursday? Were all the apostles there at that time, or did they were still coming in?
I should say by this time, meaning this is Black Wednesday,
mm.
They no doubt were with him already.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt they were with him. Sure, they would have been right with him all along.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly by today, if any stragglers, they'd be with him now, yeah.
Now, so all right, so we're up to Holy Thursday now. Now, here's a question I have to ask. Because my grandson, we're talking about Blake.
Yeah.
His favorite song is Let's Break Bread Together.
Mm-hmm.
He loves to sing that song.
Oh, yeah.
So, and the second stanza was Let's Drink Wine Together. He says, why aren't they drinking beer? And here's a question. They had beer then. They drank beer.
Yes, they did.
So why is it beer and not wine?
Because they were Passover dinner.
Okay, but
at Passover, you drink wine.
Okay.
You drink wine at Passover dinner.
Okay.
At Seder, Parish Seder, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Passover Seder. I said Parish. I meant Passover Seder.
Right, right.
That's when you drink wine.
Ah, okay.
That's when you have the four cups of wine during the course of the Seder meal.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So otherwise, though, because beer was a major thing.
It would have been beer or wine, depending on what's growing.
Right, right.
And wine was... Well, you got wine, you grew the grapes, you crushed the grapes, you got the wine, it would
mm-hmm.
store.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it away from the air, it wouldn't sour on you.
Right, you had to go flat.
If you had the grain,
mm-hmm.
and you made sure the grain was well fermented,
mm-hmm.
you kept it in containers,
right.
You'd have the fermented grain in the form of beer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some nutrition in that as well. I don't recommend all that. But at the time, since water... clean water didn't exist.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
So
that's why they drank wine or beer.
They drank
right.
wine or beer, or they cut it, they mixed it.
Right.
So they, if there's anything growing in the water, meaning bacteria,
yeah.
it would kill it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's why I got to tell Blake then, because he was singing, we were at the house, and he was singing a song, and he was singing that song, he sings that song all the time, and he started out, let's drink beer together. I said, no. He said, well, they had beer back then. Why weren't they drinking beer? I said, I don't know. I'll ask for Carl Whiteworth to give beer. But he has a lot of these questions. He asks me all the time, and I just said, we'll talk about some of them later. But anyway, that's true. When he asks these questions, he's not trying to be funny, but he is and he's not, because I correct him when he's singing, says beer. I said, no, it's wine. Then he'll sing it again. He's okay, and he'll put in beer. He said, "Oh, I forgot." I said, "No, you didn't forget." And then he'll say, "Well, why couldn't they drink beer?" I said, "I don't know why they couldn't drink beer." But it's Father Carl. Now I'll tell him.
Well,
anyway, so.
Michael, if it was beer, if it was Sunday Mass, the beer stein, not the good church. The silver and gold chalice is one thing, but not a beer stein. Doesn't have the same message, okay?
This Last Supper, was it a gathering? Did they do a lot of talking? And then
they ate and then they talked afterward. How was this convened and conducted?
I can only guess the times I was able to attend Passover Seders with members of the Jewish community over the years. But pretty much it's the same Passover. Right. Well, it is. I mean, people follow through with the procedure, with the prayers, with the order of the Haggadah, of the prayer service itself. And it's Passover is not like sitting in silence. There's words, there's liturgical words used by the leader and the people there. There's also dinner conversation over the table.
Right.
Because people talk and share and talk over dinner, and they exchange ideas. And after they sit down through the ceremonial part of the various matzah and cups of wine, then they have the meal. The meal itself, the main, the larger part of the meal, the more substantial part of the meal. They've already been through the ritual foods of the boiled egg and the bitter herbs and the salt and the and the harosis. They had that. They were that they've had, but now comes the more substantial part. And of course, any dinner meal, the conversation amongst friends.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it. We stop and think that the meal He gave us, Jesus gave us in the Eucharist, is a gathering of like-minded people around a table. You can't eat with somebody and be their enemy. And that's because you have a Passover meal,
you had
your friends over.
You have your friends over.
Your relatives and your closest friends.
Right.
So you can have the closest ones to you.
Right.
And we do this every time we come together, hopefully, celebrate on Sunday mornings and weekdays. It's the altar table set, and you can't go there with enemies. Because you're with one another there.
Right. Well, what sort of meal would this have been? Fish, lamb, chicken, combination of all three. I mean, back in those days, I don't know if they had. I guess they had cows. No, maybe they didn't have cows. They had cows, so you definitely would have had lamb. Would they have had lamb?
Yeah, they probably would have had lamb. Whatever your budget could afford.
Right. Okay. Okay.
If you could afford.
But this is a special dinner now.
Yeah.
So maybe they would have had, the hit parade of everything.
It is. I asked a member of the Jewish community, she was setting table, and why they didn't use a leg of lamb. And I said, leg of lamb. He said, because of all the blood vessels in the leg, you can't remove them all. So they have a leg of lamb. They have just the bone to be on the ceremonial plate. And that's what they would eat: chicken, maybe roast beef, the fun end of the animal. A good brisket.
Right.
But don't tell your listeners I do a good brisket, by the way.
But you know the thing is though, I don't know if that's an Eastern or Northern tradition to have a leg of lamb, but that's not a Southern tradition. As far because you can barely find lamb in the store.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, lamb is running after you up north. I mean, you can find it anywhere.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. It depends on the market, what's available. So sometimes it's usually baked chicken, roast chickens, for the main part of the meal.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, because I know, because I always had, no matter what it is, I can have lamb last week. Easter, I'm going to have lamb. And my wife, who's from the South, Charleston, that's never entered her mind.
Yeah.
You know, until she married me. You know, and she doesn't even never even really liked it. She's, but you know, she don't like deer either. And her father and her brothers love deer. They go out and hunt and shoot.
Yeah.
But the thing is that that never even entered her mind to have lamb. But that is a tradition, Northern tradition at least.
My family was the same way, coming from New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Easter Day dinner, was always a leg of lamb or two, depending on how many people come to meet.
Right, or something else, you know, large, white meat and dark meat. Large, I'd say the lamb is the dark meat, I guess. Yeah.
So maybe one or two legs of lamb, depending how many folks come to dinner that day.
Right.
It was traditional leg of lamb.
Right. So they would have, when we figured they had a full-blown meal, And then they got down to business, where would this have been the first time, this wouldn't have been the first time that he blessed the host now and the body and blood. This wouldn't have been the first time.
They would have had, it's the fourth cup of wine,
mm-hmm.
near the end of the meal.
Right.
The blessing cup at the end of the meal. And that's the last piece of the ritual matzah that's pulled out off the plate and broken and distributed.
Right.
Right there. And I'm not that really adept at the Passover Haggadah, but my observation is that if we look at what Christ did, the last thing he said to his friends was, do this in memory of me.
Right.
And last thing he did before going out was what? Give them the cup.
Right.
And they passed the matzah, broken bread. Right. They passed the broken bread around.
Right.
But so I can't say that was the Eucharist.
Right.
But he gave them something to look
remember.
At.
Remember.
And they realized, well, this is where we need to go with this.
I turn this off. Well. Okay. We were saying before we interrupted there. You know, so the last bit of the matzo or the bread, it wasn't matzo then.
Well, the unleavened bread.
Unleavened
we
bread,
call
right.
it matzo, right. unleavened bread.
Right.
Unleavened bread, right,
and,
yeah.
And he broke it off into, I guess, the pieces to go around to everybody and then do this in remembrance of me. So this is the tradition that's passed on, that we remembered connection with him, to
right.
remember him by.
Right.
So... now the last part of this is where he said that someone here will betray me this very night.
Mm-hmm. He was saying that during the meal.
During the meal, okay.
During
this wasn't the last thing. Okay.
That was during the meal. They were coming together. He said that. I don't know what part of the meal now. I'm going blank on
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
That he said someone's going to betray me tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And they all said, "No, it's not me. No, it's not
right,
me."
Right, right, right.
Judas is the one by name who said
right.
it's not going to be. Surely
right.
not I, Lord.
Right, right.
So they kind of picked on him. Yeah.
Right. So now, getting towards Judas now. He was the one that was most enamored and was the that says so in the I don't know if it was in the Gospels, but in the Bible, that he was the one that was overwhelmed with loving Christ.
Mm-hmm.
He was just almost like neurotic with it. Now, is there was they have this, and I think I talked to you about this, right? They had this this series on TV that's running right now on CNN. It's called Jesus Fact, Fiction,
mm-hmm.
or Forgery.
I remember seeing the promotions of that.
Right,
yeah.
And the question came up, they posed the question whether or not Judas was picked by God himself to be the villain. And he said, you will go down as the most villainous person that ever was, that ever walked the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
He says, but somebody's got to do it. In other words, that's the way they put it.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think about that characterization?
I think Judas gave in to whatever was in his heart and mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we Catholics believe very strongly, I mean, it's just, and hold dearly, our free will.
Right.
To exercise our free will, to think as we want, to say as we want, and decide as we want, hopefully, with all good intention. We're going to do the right thing, say the right thing, and do the right thing,
mm-hmm.
and think the right thing. And we have developed a conscience in the way of thinking and conducting our lives. And so the free will hopefully always be for the good,
right.
the good in the world, the better in the world. But it appears that Judas, somehow or other, just in his own mind, and whatever it was, he gave in, gave in to the dark side. And that's what it was.
Well,
it was
yeah, but, well see,
the
here's
side.
The thing, though. I think they were trying to say is, well, you know, after all, God gave... had his son come down here and die for us.
Yeah.
Why couldn't he ask somebody to be the gopher
mm-hmm.
and set the whole thing up so he could die for us?
I think that in itself should deliberately set Judas up to be the...
Judas had to accept it.
He had to accept it. That would be, to me, looking at, just on the outside, looking at that, I'm comfortable with that, Michael.
Right.
Because that would be contrary to God's nature, to have someone perform an evil deed.
Yeah.
If someone does it on their own volition, that's one thing. But deliberately earmark somebody
right.
to perform the evil, that's contrary to God's love.
Well, you see, and they never came up with that other side of the answer
yeah.
in the television series. Mm-hmm. Is it said anywhere that Judas felt horrible for doing this?
The only thing I can say is that looking when after Christ's crucifixion and death,
mm-hmm.
in the Gospels it says he took 30 pieces of silver,
mm-hmm.
he went to the leadership and threw the coins on the floor and left.
Right.
He didn't want to take the money. He realized what he did. And I think that probably is as deep as he's ever going to get. He finally realized the betrayal he performed right there, yeah.
So, and we're only speculating, you can only speculate.
Yeah, this is all speculation on our part, yeah.
What do you think that meant in God's eyes, how he felt about Judas then?
God is a loving and forgiving God.
Right.
And if Judas in his life ever repented and asked forgiveness, that's a whole different situation.
But he hung himself. And that is unforgivable.
Well, we know...
Supposedly.
We know now, medical science is teaching, has taught us, certainly,
mm-hmm.
that when a person goes to the act to take their own life, and that they are definitely at...
Mental problems.
And they're really at their wit's end. And like the man that crashed the airliner in Germany.
Right.
He was so depressed, so... and could see no way out of the pit into which he fell.
Mm-hmm.
This is the deep pit.
Right.
A deep, dark pit. And that's the kind of pit Judas probably felt he was in. His only way out was take his own life.
And so what you're actually saying is that, you know, there is no time really that you can, well, that we know, that you cannot get redemption.
There's no time you can ever get it. It's always available.
It's always available.
Absolutely, yes.
And, why is it that there are so many religions out there, and you have to speculate in this too, that say there is no such thing as redemption. I mean, you do this, you're dead. That's it.
That's their belief. We see redemption because we're raised in that. I believe it in my life. Others have not been exposed to it. They don't believe it. It's not a part of that culture, a local culture's way of thinking or
mm-hmm.
doing. So I have to look at that and realize, yeah, what I know, coming the faith that I have, which was born in the Eastern Mediterranean, which moved west and east, eventually,
right.
north and south, over the centuries, that some ways of thinking and doing cannot comprehend a Christ figure or a figure of redemption. I mean, you go to all the way towards the Orient, I would say Japan, for example, a person like Jesus would be viewed as a man who lost faith.
Mm.
And I see Japan, other cultures too. If a person loses faith, I mean, they have no standing in the community, has been undermined. And the fact that he was killed.
So Judas would have saved faith then?
Well, Judas perhaps would have been seen as who he was.
Right.
Redemption would have been part of life, but he'd be seen as the man who did the deed.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on local law about taking a life, all that comes into there.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of looking at Christianity, sometimes it's hard to explain how it would be understood
right.
in other cultures.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so getting back to the Last Supper now. So after the Last Supper is over, everybody departed. Jesus and how many of the other disciples went to him to pray? It was about four?
He took four of his closest, Peter, James, and John. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is this the same James that some people are saying was his brother?
Yeah, some people say it was the blood relative, yeah.
Blood relative. Cousin?
It would be cousin, perhaps, yeah.
Yeah. But see, there's really no place in there to really distinguish between brother or cousin or...
Not in that period of history.
Right,
no. Yeah.
Right. You know, so it could have been a cousin, could have been a brother. Because it's not really, well, they do say in the Bible that he had siblings.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't say he had siblings, that Mary had siblings or he had relatives. That were, but since everybody lived together as family, I mean, you could have had 14 people under one roof. And it could have been brothers and sisters, cousins. It doesn't
Absolutely.
Speculate.
That's right. And in those small little communities,
right.
like Nazareth or Bethlehem, there's no privacy.
Right.
Because the houses had no doors, as we know doors.
Right.
Kids running up and down the street.
Right.
Everybody's home. Kid pokes his or her head in the door. They see what's going on. They say, yes, Mr. Smith next door's got a whatever, you know,
right.
brand new rug on the floor. There's no secrets.
Right.
You couldn't keep secrets.
Well, just like in Brooklyn, when I had, in my family, we had a three-family house, and my grandparents, the major, he lived on the first floor, and we lived on the second and third floor, and my first cousins, they lived across the street from me,
yeah.
and it was a three-family house, and my aunt lived on the first floor, and they lived on the second and third floor, and they were in the house, running in and out of our house so much with the major, and every time they came in, they wanted something to eat, and the major used to tell them all the time, look, you come here and eat all you want, but leave your tapeworm at home. You know, the thing is, I'm not feeding everybody in the family.
Right,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I got that picture.
So the thing is that they were all running in and out, so no, and there's no specific, well, here's in the picture, we got this side of the family and that side of the family. It was all one family.
It was one family. Oh,
it was
yeah,
all one family.
Sure.
So when he went to pray, and this is the part where they fell asleep, and Christ would come back and see him sleeping. He said, oh, geez, can't leave them alone for 5 minutes. Can't you stay awake?
Mm-hmm.
And he came. It was the third time he came back when they mm-hmm. were sleeping again. It was the second time. And he told them to, just before the other soldiers, before the wasn't soldiers, the rabbis came. Would you?
Well, they were accompanied by police.
Yeah.
The equivalent of local police.
Mm-hmm.
If not soldiers, local police.
Local police.
Yeah. The equivalent thereof.
Right.
Probably temple authorities or something like that.
So did the apostles carry swords?
That's a matter for speculation. They weren't probably allowed to carry swords.
Well, that's right. So who cut off the ear?
Peter did.
So he, knife or sword?
Probably used a knife. You know, at the time when the Romans were the empire.
Right.
Right before that time right there in which Jesus walked the earth. In order to maintain peace in their empire, right now we're engaged in discussions with Iran.
Right.
The nuclear weapons.
Right.
Inspections, whatever we can do, whatever. Well, the Romans had a very similar system. Well, they would periodically go to a town or be in the city or the town where they were, the authorities, and they would go all the blacksmiths, or say blacksmiths,
mm-hmm.
all of the smiths,
right.
whether they're iron workers, blacksmiths,
right.
or copper workers,
right.
or bronze workers,
mm-hmm.
to be sure there was no iron.
Ah,
because iron
makes swords.
Can make swords, and a copper, bronze, or brass sword would be broken by an iron sword.
Mm.
This is where the Romans controlled who had the steel.
Ah.
You know, we say Damascus steel.
Right.
Damascus Spain steel. Spain is Toledo steel.
Right.
The Arabs
right.
had the Toledo steel. Fine steel even
right.
to this day. And
right.
Whatever's there in the water, the mineral,
mm-hmm.
those two places, Damascus steel, there was no way people can get these extra sharp swords. People were allowed to carry like the equivalent of a hunting knife.
Right.
Which you carried, you needed to cut things with,
right.
or even self-protection, self-defense. I stop and think when I think about this right now, New York Sullivan Law. You can't have a knife longer than 3
right.
or 4 inches.
Right, right, right. I don't think it's 4 inches. I think it's like 2 inches.
2 inches.
Right.
Well, at the time they had like a Sullivan Law.
Right.
In Israel, Sullivan Law. That's a lousy way of saying it, Myro. You can have so much iron on you, but only a certain amount, if you could have iron. It probably could have been a bronze or a brass or a copper knife. Whatever it was, Peter had a knife.
So there was no Second Amendment then.
I don't think there
right
was.
To carry.
No. No right to carry.
Well,
no.
This is they even back then they said, look, you don't need to have a weapon. we're going to protect you.
That's right.
You know, even back then.
They said that, yeah.
So, you know, and everybody went along with it. They said, okay, fine. All right.
What could you do?
What could you do?
Caesar's army is there.
You do what Caesar said. All right, so when they cut off one of these, city police ear, and then that's before...
Somebody's servant. I forget who it was. Yeah, whatever. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, cut off, and then that's when Judas came and he kissed Jesus. But he told him, the one I kiss is the one.
Right, yeah.
So... why didn't the apostles go after Judas then? They just let him kiss him and then run off?
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like the gang would have been after him.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. He just ran.
He just disappeared at that point. He
just
ran
disappeared
off.
At that point. How did they let this man get away with that?
Yeah.
And then have him carried off? I mean, you'd figure they'd be fighting. They would have did something. But it doesn't talk. It was like, it was a matter of fact. Oh, he kissed him, and he said, all right, that's on. Get him. Mm-hmm. Take him.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was no big deal. It was no major ruckus. So it seems to me, like I always thought about that. And something is missing here. Something is missing here. Because this is the person that you believed in. I mean, you've been following for years now. And... one of your own people who said that he believed in Jesus more than everybody is the one that's doing is the mole,
mm-hmm,
in the unit.
Yeah,
I mean, he'd have to pay. He'd have to pay some way, shape, or form. But now, was he paid this money, the 30 pieces of silver, before he did this, or was it after?
Before.
It was before, right?
My understanding is, yeah, that's a really, yeah.
So, he still had a chance then, up until that very time.
He could have backed off.
Backed out.
Absolutely, yeah.
And no one would have said anything. They couldn't say anything because they didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
But the other question is, when he came into town with all this big fanfare, how come they didn't know who he was? How come these rabbis did not know who this man was? Why they have to have someone pay somebody to tell us who he was? Were they having this Last Supper and all the meetings in secret? Couldn't have been.
Well, they were going to someone's home, maybe like a rental unit.
Right.
Second floor is open.
Right.
You meant it for the evening, something like that. So there was, in that sense, it was private, the fact it was behind closed doors.
Right.
Because it was somebody's home. On the second floor, we'll say somebody's home, but all satyrs, you know, the first night of Passover, families get together.
Oh, okay.
So maybe mom, dad, kids, grandma, grandpa, aunt, and uncle, cousins. Now the second or subsequent night of Passover, larger groups might get together, like in the synagogue and the temple. No, not the time of Jesus. Now.
Right.
I'm talking today.
Mm-hmm.
So there would have been family and friends. And relatives around the Passover table, yeah.
Okay, so they probably wouldn't have known unless someone had pointed them out then.
In a crowd like that, they most would not have known him. But someone had a finger Jesus.
Yeah.
And as they say, in my neighborhood, he was fingered.
He was fingered.
Judas was the finger man.
He was
the finger man.
That's
same function, different terminology.
Different place, but they did the same thing. Yeah. All right, so now, when they took him away, did they take him immediately to the city jail or to the rabbis? Or
they took him to
Herod directly.
Took him to the elders, I believe. I remember this now. Mm-hmm. You ask me if I recall the Gospels right now, sitting in my books. They took him to the leadership.
Right.
And that's where they heard the blasphemy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't deny being Son of God, Son of Man.
Right.
The blasphemy. And then they sent him to the civil authorities.
Herod then.
It would probably been Herod later to Pilate.
See,
Pilate's the one that could order death or life.
Okay. Okay. So now everybody's in a scramble. The apostles are all in a scramble because they think, well, they're going to get all of us.
You bring up a point about the mob that came to get Jesus, okay? And I thought about this really hard, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Not today, but other times,
right.
Previously, there was a crowd that went to Gethsemane, a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you now, this is Passover night. First night of Passover.
Yeah, why weren't they home with their family?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
We're all good Jewish boys supposed to be with their family.
Right.
This is like somebody going into a tavern or a bar.
Right.
A few drinks under their belts. Come on, fellas, we're going
right,
out.
Right.
Kangaroo court.
It was a kangaroo court. That's what it was.
It was a kangaroo court. It wasn't the upstanding citizens of Jerusalem. And I'm saying that. And I'm not casting.
No, but you're right. It wasn't.
It should be home in the Passover and not in the streets.
So these were not people who were religious. So they were religious in their face to other people, but not religious at heart. So they should not have been there.
They had another religion, shall we say.
Yeah. They were out drinking the beer. They weren't drinking the wine.
Well, yeah, good point. Okay, sure, okay. Yeah.
So therefore, they figured, well, he wouldn't expect us there. Anyway, mm-hmm. because we should be all home, but this was the plan.
Their plan was to get those, make a crowd, go out there, and chances are, as you said earlier, that this crowd would not have known who he was anyhow.
Right.
They're hanging out in the taverns all the time.
Right.
That's
they would not.
Lack of a
no,
way
that explains
it. Yeah.
Why they didn't know who he was, because these were not people who were there probably when he came into town in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They were not there. It just reminds me of that old Western with my cousin George, his name is right away, the Oxbow incident, Henry Fonda,
mm-hmm.
and where they hung the two guys and they didn't know whether or not they were guilty or not. It's an old Western, 1940-something.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Fonda was in it, and he kept, again, Henry Fonda, just like he was in the... And the 12 Angry Men was the voice of reason.
Mm-hmm.
And they really didn't have any real evidence, but it was a group of them around one person mm-hmm. who was stronger than the rest of them
mm-hmm.
that led them yeah. to get this stuff. Well, we'll hang these people because they're the ones that
right.
did it. Well, there's no proof he did it. Yeah, but we have this, and this. But it wasn't real good proof. So the same thing. They got Judas,
mm-hmm.
but Judas was paid by the rabbis, the people who were in charge, to go ahead and do this. But
yeah.
the rabbis didn't want to dirty their hands, so they got him. Judas, you get some
mm-hmm.
people out of the corner bar and get them to go over and get them.
Yeah.
They didn't want to, see they were the rabbis. They weren't the ones. They weren't in that group.
Mm-hmm.
They because they didn't want to get their hands dirty.
It's like the Godfather, Mike.
You
can't pin it on him.
Right.
You get someone else to do it for him.
Yeah, you get somebody else to do it for him.
That's very Mediterranean culture, Michael. You know that.
That's true.
Very Mediterranean.
That's right. So maybe they gave Judas 60 pieces. So he said, look, give this out to the rest of the people, would you? Yeah, you keep 30.
Good speculation. I can handle that.
I
yeah.
mean,
yeah.
because it, the more you think about it, they could not be in collusion with trying to, because maybe that wouldn't have worked out and Pilate wouldn't have accepted that.
See, Jesus was a popular man with a lot of the people.
That's right.
Very popular. And a good number of people.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody, a good number of people. So this is a way of getting him on a technicality.
Right.
And a technicality, you know, as the old expression goes, this is a lousy analogy with a Jewish boy. Convict a ham sandwich.
Yeah, that's right. It's like being indicted. You indict a ham sandwich. So we're indicting them.
Thank you. Yeah, you indict a ham sandwich. Yeah.
They indicted him.
Yeah.
Okay. So now he's indicted by, well, he was people who really didn't have any reputations, but when he was brought back to the rabbis, and they questioned him. Then they said, well, you know, you're saying don't make any sense. You know, you're not answering the question here.
Yeah.
So that they could go to Pilate and say, look, hey, he's got to go.
Yeah. They said he claimed to be king of the Jews.
Right.
That was the treason.
Right.
That was the treason. Right there, said, right there from the Pilate. Well, that's treason at that time. There's only one king.
Well, but he said, you say this, I'm not.
You say this, I'm not. You never denied it.
Yes, sir.
So that was enough for Pilate to say, okay, that's your, you indicted yourself.
Well, he, but that was his out, too.
Yeah.
Pilate's out, too.
Yeah.
Right. Because he didn't want to bother. That's a fight between them. I don't want to be bothered with that nonsense.
So it was an internal squabble. He didn't want to, oh God, I hate to say it, dirty his hands.
But that's what it was.
I know.
Well, didn't he say, I wash my hands of this?
Yeah.
Didn't he say that?
Yeah.
I wash my hands of this.
This whole thing, please, you're right. It's your, yeah.
Yeah, and then especially to Barabbas. Who do you want? Barabbas.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like Blake, go back to my grandson, one of my grandsons, he says, why? Didn't Barabbas kill people and do all sorts of things to people? I said, yeah. He said, well, so why did they kill Jesus?
Well,
said, I wasn't there, but I'm telling you,
it was,
they were jealous.
That's right. And that was that crowd, that liquored up crowd.
That liquored up crowd, that beer drinking crowd. They're the ones that were doing it.
Yeah.
That's who it was, that beer drinking crowd. So, up to the point where Pilate came out and gave his final decision,
mm-hmm.
Okay, he says, okay, who do you want? Let me say, I can pardon somebody. This was a day where he could pardon. Every year they pardoned.
Right.
Did it have to be a murderer? You pardon anybody you want, right?
Yep.
Pardon a murderer. Pardon. Who do you want? Give us Barabbas. He said,
yeah.
Barabbas, please, you wanted to hang him last week. I mean, you know, you want him? This man hasn't killed anybody, hasn't raped anybody, he hasn't stolen. Because even Pilate thought it was ridiculous. But he said, okay, no problems. Take him. Now, we don't hear anything about Barabbas after that.
Mm-mm.
If he went on another killing spree, or was it just something that happened? So we were talking about of a lunch, maybe he was just a MacGuffin. As Albert Hitchcock said, he was just something to string the story together. But now when he goes and they are now going to crucify him, they now discover years that the nails had to go through his wrist instead of his hands because the weight wouldn't have supported it. Now, is this a major problem with the way the scripture is was told? Because people say, well, see, they didn't tell the truth about that, so how do you believe any of it? I mean, or is this just something that passed down the many translations and corrections that they made in the Bibles over the years that, you know, palm, wrist, it doesn't matter?
I wonder what you're saying on that, Michael. It's sort of... They said they put nails in his hands and a nail into his feet.
Mm.
Now, was they differentiate between the wrist and the elbow, wrist and the arm? Is you know, at that point there, maybe in that particular time in history, there was a word for wrist and hand.
Right.
But it grew into popular piety. Yeah. It was the hand.
Right.
Popular piety.
Mm-hmm.
It was the hand. But from what I understand, when this has been looked at by medical people, and I've caught little blurbs of articles on this, that a nail would have pulled out of the hand.
Right.
Because it cannot hold the weight of the human body.
Right.
So I'm thinking, my mind is thinking, well, the Romans were very efficient in what they did.
Very efficient.
And they didn't want to waste time going back and do the job they screwed up the first time.
No, man, fell off the cross. Go get him again.
Thank you.
No way.
They put him on and made sure he stayed. And that would have meant...
Maybe put two nails in him, one in the hand and one in the wrist.
Which would have been a waste of iron. A
waste of iron, right. So therefore that would have been done.
So
right.
You put it where it would not fall out.
Right.
And so that's probably, I'd say, probably somewhere in the wrist.
Yeah.
Where the bones would catch it. And, of course, in the feet.
Right.
Now I'm not saying that's the way it is. It's a speculation on my part.
Right.
But look into what I've read about medical doctors have said. People, well, yeah. Yeah, people say in the hands. It's possible. I doubt. I would. It doesn't, to me, it makes no difference, Michael. He died.
Hey.
He rose. He
that's
died.
The only
you know?
Thing. He wasn't strapped up there. That's the one thing.
Yeah, right.
So now we get to I told you I was going to ask you this, but my grandson Blake asked another question. Well, how did they string the thorns of crown together? How did they do that without cutting their hands? I said, I'll ask Father Carl. I don't know.
Michael, we talked at lunch. You go to your grandson Blake, you say, Father Carl was not there.
He wasn't there. Because he asked me, and I was saying, you're right. They took these thorns and they wove them together.
Yeah.
And he made a crown. And he was telling me about this, that he just talked about this at school. And that was yesterday, that had been Tuesday. And he said, and they pushed it on his head. Crunch. He's making sound effects, too.
Sure.
And he said he started bleeding. He says, didn't that hurt? I said, yes, it hurt. He says, well, why did he tell them to hurt to take it off? I said, because they wanted it to hurt.
Yeah.
They wanted to ridicule him. He said, and the blood was coming in his eyes. He said, it was terrible. He said, why did they want to do that? I said, because they were so jealous of him that they let Barabbas go. They wanted to penalize him and show everybody else that they are the only ones that can speak the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that? By silencing someone. But the problem is, by silencing him in this way, if they just got him in, well, you know, he went with Jimmy Hoffa.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here today talking about this.
Yeah.
But they did it in such a vile way that's remembered for thousands and thousands of years.
That's right. All those witnesses.
Oh, no.
The witnesses, both believers, non-believers, Gentile and Jew.
That's right.
They witnessed this whole thing.
They witnessed it.
Yeah.
Nobody witnessed Jimmy Hoffa disappearing.
No, they haven't.
And we have, to this day, we don't know.
And those witnesses aren't talking either.
Right, because they're probably gone.
I'm not going there, Michael. Let's leave
they're probably gone, too. But the thing is that you want to silence a question or silence somebody, just have it disappear. People can't remember their own name after they're told it 15 times. So, you know, we're talking about over 2,000 years now.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I mean, why is this vivid like you can almost see it yourself? Why is it? Because it was so vile and so outlandish, and
mm-hmm.
so many people from every walk of life saw it,
yeah.
and remembered it and passed it down in
right.
their families. If they would have said, okay, when that mob got him and took him away, if no one ever heard anything more about it, he said he was here, they took him away, we don't know what happened. We would not be here today talking about that.
I would say so, yeah.
So then, to make it worse, they're going to crucify him. And before I get to that, though, I want to talk about a couple of the characters that were there. At his death, there was Mary and Joseph of Arimathea.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Magdalene.
And I think Salome was there too.
Salome too?
She was there the next morning, I think. Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
Are they the ones that took him down from the cross?
They probably were the only ones there. Yeah.
Only ones there, okay.
It may be, figure if Joseph were there, maybe another man or two.
Mm-hmm.
What they probably would have done, and I've been told this.
Because how could he get him down? I mean, that's a huge
yeah.
cross.
They would have probably taken like a piece of fabric
mm-hmm.
and wrapped it around his body.
Mm hmm.
And then would have hoisted him up and taken his hands off the nails and lowered him to the ground, wrapped in a cloth.
Because they couldn't take that cross down.
No, there's no way to take the cross down, no. That's why very often they show crosses at Easter with a white scarf hanging on it.
Right.
That's symbolic of the cloth they used. They would have used, some people say, either wrapped the body with, which probably would have been, or what they used to lower the body from the cross down to the ground.
Okay, this would not be the cloth of Turin.
I know.
That would be a different one that they
buried. The burial cloth. They buried him in that, yeah.
Right, right. Okay, so when they took him down, did they wash him and everything in the cave, or where they placed the body in the tomb, or did they do that before they took him there? Because I don't remember it says anything about that.
I don't know. The burial customs were, from my understanding, before sundown.
Okay.
So it was getting close to Sabbath.
That's right.
Saturday Sabbath. So they probably did a quick job of cleaning him off, and then whatever could be cleaned, put him in the tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the first day of the week, when Sabbath is over, then they go back into the appropriate anointings that go with burial, with that period.
Okay, so if that was Friday, Saturday they did the cleaning there?
No, it wouldn't have done any work.
No, it would have been Sabbath.
Couldn't do work on Sabbath.
Right, so it would have been Sunday.
Sunday morning they go to it, yeah.
So where was the body between that time?
Well, it's supposed to be in the tomb.
Okay, so then we went back to the tomb.
Went back to the tomb on Sunday morning.
Okay.
And this one found that there was no body.
So they didn't put... they were going back there to do this.
We're going returning to the tomb.
Ah, they were returning
to finish the appropriate...
The burial rites.
Anointings and burial rites.
Okay, okay. And that's when they found the cloth folded up and whatnot. Okay. And because they had put the roll of the rock in front of the tomb.
They did. Joseph had that done, yeah.
Yeah, so... And that's when they discovered that the rock wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, Mary Magdalene didn't pull that rock away for herself.
No, there's a big hunk of rock.
So it's a big hunk of rock. All right, so now we're talking about, because he said he would rise 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the first person that Jesus appeared to? That, I guess...
Mary Magdalene.
Was it that Sunday?
Easter morning, Sunday morning. First day of the week, she thought it was a gardener. One of the Gospels tells us she thought it was a gardener.
Now, is this before they went to the tomb, supposed to go to the tomb? Right.
Yeah, right. Different nuances about the message, and found out that wasn't the gardener, it was Jesus himself.
Mm.
Well, they went to the tomb, and the stone had been rolled back, and they went inside.
Did he tell them to go to the tomb, or...
He never told them anything.
He didn't tell them anything.
This was on their part to do this.
Right.
Yeah. As far as I know, this was their responsibility to bury appropriate actions in the burial of the dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that means for anointing is certain rituals.
Yeah, because in Jewish community, was it 2 days you had to be buried? Or?
That night.
That night, same night.
Before sundown, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now everybody is... I don't know what to think.
Yeah.
Did Mary Magdalene tell them then that she had this vision earlier?
She was there. She went to the tomb, didn't see Jesus, and she ran back to Jerusalem to say, they've taken his body.
Mm.
Her mind wasn't resurrection.
Right.
Her mind, one of the stories is that they took him. And another story is he was there. She found him in the garden walking around. So... The first announcement of the resurrection was by a woman. The woman is the first announcement of the resurrection. Not a man, a woman. The first preacher of the resurrected Christ was a woman.
Oh my gracious Lord. You know. Boy, that ain't well known. I say that right now.
Well, kind of glossed over a little bit.
Yeah, no, just a little. Just a little.
Yeah.
Where was Joseph of Arimathea then? Because he's not mentioned once the body's put into the to the tomb. He's not mentioned anymore.
No.
And he was a prominent man.
He was a leader in the community, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
He may have been there. He may have been at home. Who knows? Maybe he distanced himself from the community. I don't know.
Why is it in all these readings about, no matter what it is, Christmas or anything that God did, there is always a group that's always mentioned, somewhere, shape, or form. They're always around. And then you'll see others are mentioned once, you never hear about them again.
Yeah.
So it's like these people were his gang. I mean, or his... You can't say followers because... all the disciples that I mentioned all the time.
Yeah, there was people who followed her, closest friends.
Mm-hmm.
Ones he dealt with, let's say, on a regular basis.
Right.
And don't forget, too, in the Mediterranean world, a different culture than we have here, but at the time, you know, if you were a person of some importance, there were always people around you who appreciated your importance. So he always had a following of people. And it was important for a man, if a man, usually it was a man, was a man of importance or substance in the community, he always have a retinue with him wherever he went.
Mm.
I don't mean a crowd of 1,000,
but a few
people who are walking with him to just keep pace with him or whatever.
Now we have Christ appearing to Mary Magdalene. He disappeared. then the second person he appears to again,
mm-hmm.
it's the same day. Or is it the day after?
We look at it being a period of days.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
It could, well, be, could be 50 days.
Right,
Pentecost. Yeah. And maybe it was a 50-day period.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was, and some scholars will say this, that he rose, he appeared to the 12, as John's Gospel tells us,
mm-hmm.
and when he breathed on them, the Holy Spirit came upon them. He ascended the same day. All happened. Resurrection, descent of the Holy Spirit, ascension of Jesus, all within that one time period we call a day.
Right. Well, this is almost like the same time period we're saying God created heaven and earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh. You know, it could have been 6 days, could have been 1,000 years.
Yeah. Wow, wow.
I mean,
something like that. Right, yeah.
We don't actually know. And now there's a major difference between it's called the language Aramaic.
Aramaic, yeah.
Aramaic, and then the language that came after, who don't read Aramaic, don't understand it. It's very difficult, even though it's coming from the same region.
Mm-hmm.
So the translation to all these different things, to the Gospels, are really, are we saying in the eyes and ears of the person that's writing it, and the translation could have been different?
Well, by the time Jesus walked the earth, beginning there, the we know was sacred scripture.
Right.
It was being translated, was already being into Greek.
Yeah.
Into Greek. And so the scripture, the core of scripture for many people, was in Greek. I mean, that was
right.
the language of the part of the world. Greek
mm-hmm.
was the language of the part of the world. It was only later that scholars began to translate the Greek back into what we call, I'll say modern Hebrew, like but
mm-hmm.
Hebrew, that's known as Hebrew today.
Right. Okay. So the there could be some gaps in the translation then.
Oh, I don't doubt there might be some sort of. I mean, they were all these thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
whatever has been translated to date, we have. Pretty well is still there, what we have
yeah.
in hand. So there's been very meticulous, almost feverish drive to be sure everything is right on point.
Right.
But even then, there's going to be gaps somewhere because a scroll might be, a reference is missing.
Right.
Or what I say, a scroll is missing, a reference of some kind. And so a gap might be missing there. Yeah, that's possible.
And then we're talking about now the Dead Sea Scrolls. I mean, we don't have them intact, so there's a lot of things, there's gaps that they have to fill in this to see, well, this had to be said before this was done because it means this. Well, you're only guesstimating
yeah.
what it said.
Yeah, one I saw this particular show on television, very well done. They were showing the Dead Sea Scrolls and their sketchy
mm-hmm.
Scroll of the prophet Isaiah.
Uh-huh.
Well, they overlaid that, so to speak, on top of the current Isaiah, and whatever is there is right on point.
Ah, oh, okay.
It's right on point. A few things are missing, but then everything was there was already on point. So
mm-hmm.
it tells me that, yeah, somewhere along the line, well, look, my gosh, you're busy working. You're working in a monastery in Germany or France. You're working by candlelight, and you're writing everything in longhand in the Bible. You put your quill pen down, and you sneeze, and you go back to continue. Instead of an I, you make an E.
All right, all right.
Something as simple as that.
Yeah.
An innocent accident.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing
mm-hmm.
intentional.
Right.
And realize, not knowing about it, realizing that mistake's going to be there for another 800 years.
Right, right.
And translators will see that mistake and realize, what was that?
What
was that scribe monk doing in the scriptorium? You know, or maybe this is the way it's supposed to be. But little things like that
yeah.
can happen.
Yeah. What does Holy Week and Easter and Good Friday mean to Christianity, especially to Catholics?
I would say from just how I see it myself, and having spent my time not just as a practicing Catholic, but certainly now as a pastor for quite a few years, more than I care to admit sometimes. This is the time of the year, these are the days when we can mark as saying this is the time of my liberation.
Mm.
All the stuff that took place beforehand is good, but right now, this is when the rubber hits the road.
The rubber hits the road.
Yeah.
And why is there such a major difference in how we feel about Easter, and you just said what rubber hits the road, and Christ's birth?
I can speculate a lot on that. Oh, it would be a speculation. I mean, Christmas comes in the middle of winter. It's dark and dreary. And here we have lights and candles and celebration. And we eat and have a good time. We drink and we give each other gifts. It's what we do. Easter, it's in the springtime. The days are longer by virtue of the weather, the axis of the earth changing on its orbit around the sun. And it's about death and resurrection. And we treat it differently, I think. And then we treat it differently too. And so this is really the biggest moment we have is Jesus. And coming, who came into the world, who died and rose for us. Mm-hmm. And we hold that dear, that I refer myself as I read this. I will go through the rituals and prayers this weekend as we begin to celebrate the Passover of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Israel passed through the Red Sea. That was a one-way trip. And that sea slammed shut. You're not going back to Egypt.
That's right.
No way back to Egypt. And with us, with Jesus dying on the cross and rising, is our Passover for us, who brings us to relationship with the creating God. That it's the one-way trip with Him.
Mm.
And how important the season is. And everything we do is so carefully marked out and proscribed, because this is what we try to do faithfully every year, as close as we can to what Jesus went through his last 3 days, last week of life.
But do you feel that Christmas and Easter, I always felt that Easter was more about life than Christmas, because we're celebrating a new beginning with Easter?
I would say so with that, Michael. Yeah, we are a new beginning. It's a whole new life now, Passover
right.
over for us.
Right.
A whole new beginning. We begin life all over again.
Right.
Yeah. Sure.
And then to ask a question that Blake asked me, what's Easter Bunny got to do with Easter?
I'll tell you a story, Michael. My dad told Frank and I, my brother Frank and I, when we were about Blake's age and a bit younger,
mm-hmm.
you know, Daddy, why the Easter Bunny? Mommy, Easter Bunny? And my father's answer was the best one I ever heard. Easter Bunny, he can go all the houses because he can run so fast. And that's a boy from the Bronx. Story, okay? That's a Bronx boy story.
Well, I remember I got, my brother and I, my mother bought us a rabbit for Easter.
No way.
1 year.
Oh my God.
We were about, I think, 6 and 7, or 5 and 6. We were young. And next to our two baskets full of candy and chocolate, there was a basket that had a bunny, a baby bunny in it. A real baby bunny.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That's the first animal we ever had. And we could not believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Easter Bunny brought us an Easter Bunny. And we played with them because we're off for almost, I guess, 10 days from school. And we played that Easter rabbit. And you thought, well, I guess you could train a rabbit. I guess you can. But I'll tell you, that rabbit used to do so much mess all over the floor. It was unbelievable. Got little beanies. Anyway, so the thing was that it was beautiful pink ears, mm-hmm. white, very soft. And we used to feed it. We had it for about a year. Yeah. Then we gave it back. Then we gave it to a pet store.
Right.
But it was, we used to call him Harvey.
You have Harvey the Habit.
We found that. My mother said, "What? You should name him Harvey." And later we found because of the story about Harvey.
Right.
Harvey
yeah.
Rabbit. And we called him Harvey, and we would bring in lettuce, and we would feed him. We couldn't wait to feed him with the carrots and whatnot. And that was a wonderful time. But I mean, we got everything we were kids.
Yeah.
We really did.
Yeah.
But I'll know. But the question when he asked me, "Well, why?" That Blake said, "Why a rabbit? What does that have to do with Jesus? What does that have to do with it? We got to look for eggs. What is the reason?" I said, "Look, I don't know. I'll ask Father Carl. But I have no idea. It could have been a chicken. I don't know.
Yeah,
we could be taking chicken eggs. But maybe, there are chicken eggs. They are eggs.
Yeah.
They're chicken eggs anyway. So rabbits don't lay eggs. So they have live birds. So never really understood that. But I told him I'd ask you. And so I think we had a pretty good explanation of the Passion and the Resurrection, and I'd like for you to give us a closing Easter story that can wrap up why Easter and the Resurrection.
Yeah. Well, the people in darkness, we don't want to live in darkness. It inhibits us, it slows us down, and in the darkness is going to be fear because unknown, hiding in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, who we are as believers in God through Jesus Christ, it was God's light into the world was Jesus himself. He was a light into the world for us. And he kind of, lit the path for us to follow. And in order for us to experience this, to fulfill, to bring justification to the world, to bring perfection. Now, perfection doesn't mean moral perfection, but the perfection of being in our relationship with the Lord God, someone had to pay the price.
Hmm.
And the one who paid the price wasn't you or me, or the person next door. It was Jesus Christ himself. So Christ became the supreme sacrifice of all. And being the supreme and only sacrifice, it will say it fulfilled. We needed to be fulfilled for the removal of sin in the world. And that's why Easter is so important. We had to have Easter in order to have forgiveness of sin. We need to have the crucifixion and the resurrection and the ascension for the forgiveness of sin.
Put the cherry on top of that. I think that's perfect.
Thank you, Mike.
And I want to thank you for giving us time today. And this is going to be aired on this Friday, which will be the 3rd.
That's right.
Of April, and then of the archive starting on Saturday. So everybody should listen to this. This has been Michael Lawson here at Our Lady of Consolation Catholic Church with my pastor, Father Carl Del Judas.
My pleasure, Michael.
Thank you.
You very much.
You come to bury the dead? Or have you come to feed the mourners? You made a leper well. You made a cripple walk. Was it too much to ask that you keep my brother from dying? Why do you come now that he's dead, when you could have come while he lived, when he needed you? Why?
Your brother will rise again.
Rise? Yes, he will rise on Judgment Day. The resurrection of us all.
I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Do you believe this, Martha? Do you believe this, Mary?
If you had only been here, I believe that Lazarus would not have died.
Who is like thee, O Father, in heaven? majestic in holiness, terrible in glorious deeds, doing wonders. There is none that can deliver out of thy hand. You wound and you heal. You kill and you make alive. Come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe upon this man, that he may live.
Come forth!
right about something. The prophecy is that... Don't talk to me about prophecy. I've heard enough about prophecy.
When he is killed, after 3 days, he will rise again.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the tomb, Thomas.
Why? Gone. Why seek ye the living among the dead?
Disappeared in the night.
Are you sure?
I went to see for myself. The tomb is empty.
One of the soldiers. Did you question them?
Yes. They saw nothing at all.
Are they asleep?
They swear they were not.
Of course they do. The Roman punishment for sleeping on duty is death.
Incredible. In any case, the whole thing will be forgotten in a week.
I wonder.
Love one another and to find the kingdom of God, and all things shall be yours without the asking. Do not fret then over tomorrow. Leave tomorrow to fret over its own needs, for today's troubles are enough. Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world.